Repeat after me, I'll phrase it. After asking various questions.
After asking various questions.
And becoming established. In the transcendental loving service. Of Lord Krishna. Vidura retired.
Vidura retired.
From putting questions to Maitreya Muni.
Okay, Prabhu, so everybody that's on free conferencing, which is quite a few people, I'm going to mute you. Now, in case you need to unmute yourself, all you have to do is use the same, if you're calling on Skype, use the same keypad and press *6 and it should work. You'll become unmuted. But everybody, if we could all be quiet while Vidugda Madhava Prabhu is talking. So Vidugda, just give me 1 second and then we'll switch over.
Sure. Burk Burk by Srila Prabhupada. Vidura retired from putting questions before Maitreya Muni when he was convinced by Maitreya Rishi that the summum bonum of life is to be finally situated in the loving in the transcendental loving service of Lord Sri Krishna, who is Govinda, or one who satisfies his devotees in all respects. The conditioned soul, the living being in material existence, seeks happiness by employing his senses in the form of materialism, but that cannot give him satisfaction. He then searches after the absolute truth by the empiric, philosophic, speculative method and intellectual feats. But if he does not find the ultimate goal, he again goes down to material activities and engages himself in various philanthropic and altruistic works, which all fail to give him satisfaction. So neither fruitive activities nor dry philosophical speculation can give one satisfaction, because by nature, a living being is the eternal servant or the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, and all the Vedic literatures give him directions towards that ultimate end. The Bhagavad Gita confirms this statement. Somehow the verse is left out of the purport, so sarvasya chaham hridi sanish vishto mata smriti jnanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Prabhupada's purport continues. Like Vidura, an inquisitive conditioned soul must approach a bona fide spiritual master like Maitreya, and by intelligent inquiries must try to know everything about karma, or fruitive activities, jnana, philosophical research for the absolute or the supreme truth, and yoga, the linking process of self or spiritual realization. One who is not seriously inclined to put questions before a spiritual master need not accommodate a show bottle spiritual master, nor should a person who may be a spiritual master for others supposed to be so if he is unable to engage his disciple ultimately in the transcendental loving service of Lord Sri Krishna. Vidura was successful in approaching such a spiritual master like Maitreya, and he got the ultimate goal of life, bhakti unto Govinda. Thus, there was nothing to be known further about spiritual progress. Om Vijnan Sarvandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Maha. So the leelas of the Lord are wonderful. Vidura is one of the most noble characters in the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam. He's the lord of religion himself, and he goes on pilgrimage to be trained up in the conclusion of devotional theism to Krishna. So we heard in the last purport how Vidura took birth as the result of a curse by Manduka Muni. And Irmala Didi mentioned there that there's some backstory where Yamaraj wanted to associate with Krishna's pastimes here on earth, and who wouldn't? So I'd like to begin by taking up a thread left from the last class about Vidura's mixed parentage. Vidura is returning to the palace after a long pilgrimage. And we'll see in the next few verses that the whole family comes to life because they're so happy to see him. Not only is Vidura honored as an elder of the royal family, his virtues were well known. Of course, Vidura was fathered by Veda Vyas, who was called in an emergency by his queen Satyavati, his mother, Parashuram, when her only son, Vichitravirya, was killed in battle. So the continuation of the royal line was in danger of not continuing. So it was some sort of an emergency. Vichitravirya was survived by two wives, Ambika and Ambalika, and Satyavati requested her son to produce sons in the womb of the two queens. Veda Vyas, he looked a little wild from his austerities and most likely had dreadlocks all bound up in a top knot. I was reading Krishna Dharma's Mahabharata some time back, and he surprised me by, and I don't know if he's getting this from a translation or where he got this, but he's describing Veda Vyas was dirty, and covered with dirt or something. But his face was probably looking weathered from austerities, and he didn't look like a young man. And I read somewhere that Veda Vyas took a year to prepare himself for the service for his mother and the royal family. But when the time came, he still looked so fierce that the queens responded in fear when he approached their chambers. So he was an aesthetic, not a royal prince with oiled and perfumed hair or a young, handsome kshatriya. So the queen, Queen Ambika, closed her eyes tight during the union with Veda Vyas, and as a result, her son Dhritarashtra was born blind, and Queen Ambalika, she turned white in fear, and her son Pandu was born very white. Since a blind son cannot rule the kingdom, Satyavati probably saw that there was only one legitimate heir to the throne, so she requested Veda Vyas for a third son, fearing that the only son that could ascend the throne may also not survive, as her only son was killed in battle. So when Veda Vyas went to the chambers of Ambalika for the second time, she'd arranged for one of her maidservants to take her place, and Vidura was born of this maidservant. Still, Vidura, as the son of Veda Vyas, was accepted as part of the royal family, and Dhritarashtra accepted his younger brother as a good advisor, which is generally the role of a Brahmin. Of course, we all know that Pandu died untimely for his young sons, born of Kunti and Madri, by different demigods during their exile in the forest. And the sages advised Kunti to return to the palace with her young boys after her protector Pandu was gone and Madri had entered the funeral pyre. And so all the elder members of the royal family, especially Grandfather Bhishma and Vidura, which Prabhupada calls Mahatma in one of the purports in this chapter, protected the boys who were the rightful heirs to the throne. So we all know that Dhritarashtra fathered 100 sons who were too young also to rule. So he was occupying the throne in the interim. And he also looked after the children of Maharaj Pandu, but of course was in favor of his sons to inherit the throne. So Mahatma Vidura could understand the motives of Dhritarashtra and his most ambitious son, Duryodhana. So he's very careful to protect the Pandava boys and Kunti. And Srila Prabhupada says he was equally affectionate to all the nephews. That's one of the purports in this chapter. But he was against Dhritarashtra encouraging his sons at the expense of the Pandavas. So there's all this intrigue. And in this, his role in the intrigue, in this Leela, Vidura was well known partial to the Pandavas, you know, because they were the rightful heirs of the throne. So Vidura specifically saved the Pandavas and Kunti from the shellac house arranged by Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana for the purpose of killing the Pandavas. And he warned Yudhisthira in a cryptic way before they left to go to the vacation house, and even visited them in disguise to warn them again before the event. So after the news of the apparent death of the Pandavas in the fire, Dhritarashtra performed the last rites of death, you know, as Prabhupada writes, very with great cheerfulness. But Vidura, he didn't mourn with the rest of the family because he knew the Pandavas were alive. Anyway, the Pandavas eventually surfaced and were given a remote region to rule, which they turned into a more opulent city than Hastinapur, than the gambling match and the resulting 13-year exile. So it's interesting to note that Dhritarashtra called Vidura to the palace for his advice on how to handle the situation after Yudhisthira and his brothers successfully completed their exile and were returning to Hastinapur. So Duryodhana and Shakuni, they were present at the meeting. So one gets the idea that Dhritarashtra was not happy with the harsh position of his son Duryodhana. Anyway, Vidura didn't mince words as soon as he came into the meeting. He told Dhritarashtra that he was maintaining offense personified Duryodhana as his son, because Duryodhana was envious of Krishna, Dhritarashtra had become devoid of all auspiciousness. So Vidura, he advised Dhritarashtra, his elder brother, that he should relieve himself of this misfortune at once and do good to the entire family. Of course, Duryodhana and Shakuni couldn't believe his boldness, and they're shaking in anger. And Duryodhana's famous reply is, "Who asked this son of a kept mistress to come here? He's so crooked that he spies on those under whose protection he grew up, so that they can favor the enemy. Throw him out of the palace at once, leaving him only his breath." So this is the moment where we are becoming aware of Vidura as a Sudrani. And I don't think this was prominent in the palace, you know, that Vidura was considered a Sudra. We've been trained, you know, but in the line of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, that Vaishnava is even beyond Brahman. and there's a famous verse where Lord Chaitanya, he said, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a householder, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm das and a das and a das. You know, that's the ultimate. So Vidura, he's a Vaishnava. And although the Vedic system in ancient times did work, that actually Brahmins were Brahmins, they were qualified as such, Kshatriyas were qualified as such, this Vaishnav, the Vidura was a Vaishnav, and also, you know, practically an incarnation of Yamaraj, it transcends all that Varnashram business. So, and this is not the way that Dhritarashtra was dealing with him also. He's an advisor. Of course, what Duryodhan said to Vidura pierced his ears and heart, but he did not reply outwardly. Vidura considered such an act the external energy of Krishna that was meant to detach himself from all the politics and the diplomatic intrigues of the palace. I'm sure he was fed up at that point. And he had no interest in the royal opulence of his brother and was always prepared to leave home and devote himself to the service of the Lord. So Vidura, he saw a golden opportunity and appreciated how the supreme energy of the Lord, although acting externally in the case of Duryodhana, the modes, the same energy was acting internally to help him. And for this reason, he was not at all upset or sorry about the insult. He actually thanked Duryodhana within his heart as he placed his bow at the door and left for pilgrimage. So he, in this way, he decided to quit his paternal house and take to the Vanaprastha ashram, a retired life, which is generally traveling and visiting holy places on the surface of the earth. And the side effect of this was that he could also see where this was all going with Duryodhana and the Pandavas. And like Balaram, he avoided the war. So it's mentioned that Vidura could have gone to Dwarka directly to see Krishna, but being a humble Vaishnava, he considered himself to be contaminated by the association of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. And knowing that one cannot be 100% devoted to the Lord, unless one speaks of all simple actions, he considered himself unfit for the Lord's direct association. And for this reason, he decided to visit the holy places of pilgrimage so he could become purified and thus come nearer to the Lord. And he dressed like a mendicant so he wouldn't be recognized and visited famous holy places like Ayodhya and Mathura. So this went on for years. And during that time, he's traveling at a place called Prabhash. Vidura heard about the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, and he headed west and eventually met Uddhava on the banks of the Jamuna and heard some amazing Harikatha about the details of Krishna winding down his pastimes. And Uddhava was one of the only direct associates of Krishna that remained, was left behind, and he heard that Krishna had entrusted him with confidential knowledge regarding the mystery of the Lord's disappearance, and that was to be delivered to Naranarayan Rishi and the other sages at Bhadarak Ashram. And of course, it's in the 11th canto, sometimes called Uddhava Gita or Uddhava Sandesh. So he was given the responsibility of taking essentially the same essence of the Vedas given in the Bhagavad Gita to the Rishis and Naranarayan Rishi, specifically at Bhadarak Ashram. So And that, I mean, it's so wonderful. I'm reading that now, and it's just so helpful in increasing my depth of understanding of the same information in Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna is under a tree and just sitting there, plenty of time. He's talking to a devotee that he tells he loves him more than his very self. There's no rush. They're not on a battlefield. It doesn't have to be said in 45 minutes. And he's not having to convince someone to fight. So it's very interesting. Some of the, actually the Manmano, Baba Mad Bhakto, this verses, same verses show up, and very similar verses all throughout that Uddhava Gita. It's very, very nice part of Bhagavatam. So after some time, Uddhava departed to Bharak Ashram, and Vidura proceeded to the mouth of the Ganga at Haridwar to meet Maitreya Muni. And although Vidura was always anxious to hear about the pastimes of Krishna, he humbly inquired in the beginning about preliminary spiritual topics that are especially beneficial for the common man. And then Vidura, he later admitted that these subjects, lesser subjects of mundane religiosity, had never satisfied him. And after repeatedly hearing these things, so he asked Maitreya to discuss Krishna Katha for the benefit, which is the real benefit of hearing the Mahabharata. So Vidura requested Maitreya to describe the Lord's pastimes by starting with his Purusha incarnations. And it goes on. It's amazing. Third canto Bhagavatam. It's just absolutely amazing part of Bhagavatam. And the wonderful Harikatha heard by Vidura is recorded there. So going back to... So one last thing. Balaram, he... of course, went on pilgrimage also to avoid the war. And it's interesting, you know, he had some affection for Duryodhan. So Dhritarashtra is not all bad. Duryodhan is not completely bad, although, you know, his hatred of the Pandavas is his disqualification, just as Karna, who is the son of Kunti by the sun god, you could say he's the original hard luck kid. He was the actual heir to the throne. And even Krishna approached him before the battle and told him that the secret of his birth, and that Yudhisthira, being righteous, you know, wedded to the truth, he would step down if he heard that Karna was his older brother. And he could ascend the throne. But Karna was so caught up in his rivalry with Arjuna, he couldn't. And also Duryodhana, even though his parentage, he was found by a charioteer after Kunti let him go in a basket in the river, even though his parentage was mixed, or he couldn't give, you know, his ancestry properly because of the way he was adopted. Duryodhana, he just looked at him and saw a Kshatriya. There was no question the way his shoulder, I mean, he was born with armor and ornaments. If that isn't, I mean, but Duryodhana, he could recognize, he was full on. And so he made him a king. So Duryodhana endeared Karna to, you know, and he ignored his parentage or his background. It didn't mean anything, because all Duryodhana was concerned about was his hatred of Arjuna, and that was good enough for him. You're with me, you know, we're on the same page here. So it's interesting how this parentage comes up and doesn't come up. And it also shows up in Balaram's pilgrimage when he comes to the rishis at Namashranya. And there's Romaharshana Sutta on the throne, and Romaharshana Sutta makes the fatal mistake of not getting up, not recognizing that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has just walked into the assembly. I mean, you could make a case. I mean, he's on the Vyasa sign, and there's probably somewhere you could find that there's an exemption if somebody's on the Vyasa sign for getting up or offering obeisances when a superior personality arrives in the assembly, you know, to avoid some sort of a whatever disturbance in the class or whatever. But Romaharshana Sutta made a big mistake there, and if he had gotten up and shown respect to Balaram, Balaram probably would have just not bothered with, you know, looking into it. His parentage wouldn't have come into his mental system, you know, into it wouldn't have become an issue. But because he showed some disqualification by not getting up and showing respect, what happened was Balaram immediately became aware of his disqualification, his mixed parentage. They weren't strict, you know, straight Brahmins. So he just went up there with the kusha straw. He just plucked a dry piece of grass, and which has some dimensional stability, but it's pretty magical. It wasn't a limp piece of grass. It was a straw. And he just pushed it through his sternum and finished him right there on the Vyasa sign. So it's interesting how it works, how, you know, your birth, guna karma, your guna karma takes, you know, is the prominent way that you're seen, you know, in the Varnashram system, how you work, what your qualities are. And especially in Kali Yuga, it doesn't work anymore, really, you know, the strict system, because being born into a family doesn't guarantee that someone's going to take it up, you know, especially in the Brahmin section. So, and the Kshatriyas, they've been cheated out of the government. It was cleverly done. Indira Gandhi gave them a stipend, a monthly payment, if they would just, you know, be figureheads, and they're not collecting taxes anymore. And then they weaned them off that. They stopped the payments. And some of these kings in India, they just became playboys. That's what happened in Udaipur and other places, and they just started traveling the world, you know, frivolously, acting frivolously. So the Kshatriyas are gone. So in Kali Yuga, it's about guna karma, and we're not too much concerned about the birth. And of course, our target is Vaishnavism. It's not becoming a Brahmin necessarily. You know, the Sri Sampradaya, they're very strict with their rituals. You know, they had some issue in Jayapur with the way the Gaudiyas were doing things with Govindaji, and they had some objection, and Baladev had to come and straighten that out. But we're not concerned about Brahmin, Kshatriya, you know, in the strict sense of Varnashram. We're more interested in Vaishnava. And Vaishnavas, Vanchakulpa, Trubhyascha, they're full of compassion for the fallen souls. And it's about going back to Godhead in this age. It's not about perfecting some vana or some ashram. And so in the case of Romaharshana Sutta, because he made his mistake, you know, his parentage came out. In the case of Vidura, because he said something harsh in the presence of Duryodhana, immediately, you know, he went to that to insult him. Actually, that maidservant, technically in Vedic culture, is also his grandmother. And that's mentioned somewhere in the purports in this chapter. And it's interesting, you know, how he used it. But it's family, and when these things sometimes happen. So that's the Van Ashram thing that I wanted to talk about. So let's see. We're back to the verse. After asking questions and becoming established in the transcendental loving service of Lord Krishna, Vidura retired from putting questions to Maitreya Muni. Okay. Vidura is showing the process. He's putting questions before Maitreya until he's convinced of the goal of life, which is transcendental loving service of Krishna, Govinda. And it appears that this process is a waxing process. It's not, you know, just because we hear once or twice that Krishna's Godhead, and theoretically we accept that. There's a whole process where faith thickens into, you know, deepens, it gets firm, and eventually develops into love of Godhead. So it's a whole process that we're involved in. And it takes time. It generally takes time. And of course, some of us are picking it up from a past life. So some of us may be picking it up a little further on than some others that are newer to the to this. But in effect, it's not sufficient to hear these wonderful conclusions once or twice or all the details in between, but we should dedicate our lives to hearing this Harikatha. And in this way, our realization deepens and deepens. And to the point where Vidura, you know, he's completely in touch with Supersoul, and he's understanding how, you know, this event happened and the implications of that. And very quickly he processes that, and he understands that his time has come to leave the palace and to go on pilgrimage. And he leaves his bow by the door and he leaves. And within his heart, he's thanking Duryodhana. Thank you for the opportunity. I probably wouldn't have done this at this time unless you did that. So Prabhupada in the purport goes through the process of, you know, the conditioned souls. They're trying to enjoy fruit of activities. Actually, the impersonalists, they pity the conditioned souls. You know, and then the devotees pity the impersonalists because they don't, you know, their hard labor, you know, the fruit of their hard labor, Brahman, it's like, it's nothing compared to devotional ecstasies. Being in direct contact with the Lord, serving the Lord, being in the presence of the Lord is so much greater than, you know, doing some empiric philosophical speculation, and a lot of them will fail. And even those that succeed, because they don't recognize the lotus feet of the Lord, they fall down. They're forced back down here, and they sometimes become big philanthropists, or they're doing welfare activities. You know, they may be in the mode of goodness, but they're not. They haven't. You know, they failed ultimately to solve their problem of repeated birth and death. And the only way to solve that is to become an eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. And the Vedic literatures give direction towards that ultimate end. And we read the verse in the 15th chapter that not only we have the compiler of the Vedas is within our own hearts. And so he's the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So by all the Vedas, he's to be known, but even the Vedas, by the Vedas, he's hidden. So you have to come into contact with a pure devotee of Krishna. You have to come in with a very high, self-realized soul, and then you get it. You get the conclusion of the Vedas. So the Prabhupada says in the purport, like Vidura, an inquisitive, conditioned soul must approach a bona fide spiritual master like Maitreya, and by intelligent inquiries must try to know everything about karma, fruit of activities, jnana, philosophical speculation, and yoga. So we're all encouraged to hear Harikatha from learned devotees and self-realized souls. And Prabhupada says, one who is not seriously inclined to put questions before spiritual master and We need not accommodate a show bottle spiritual master, nor should a person who may be a spiritual master for others pose to be so if he's unable to engage his disciple ultimately in the transcendental loving service. So he has to be engaged. He has to have some connection there, and to engage others. You know, so Vidura was successful in approaching such a spiritual master like Maitreya, and he got the ultimate goal of life, bhakti unto Govinda. Thus, there's nothing to be known further about spiritual progress. So, the famous verse in the fourth chapter of Gita, Tadvidi Panipatena Pariprasnina Sevaya Upadekshanti Te Jnanam Jnaninas Tapadarshana. One of the edits, the few edits that I really appreciate, is that they made the Tarpadarshis plural here. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him, the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Tathagarshi is plural. So serious inquiry is encouraged. And I remember I was in the years that I was around Shoshana Maharaj, Bhargava came. And he took a lot of pictures of Prabhupada. He's an interesting devotee. Anyway, he wanted to do a book on South India. He wanted to do a couple of books, but one of the books he wanted to do was on the Alwars. And so he started to a line of questions to Shoshana Maharaj because he knew Shoshana Maharaj. He's a Sanskritist. Read all the books in Sanskrit, the original Sanskrit. So he's asking him questions about, wants to hear stories about the Alwars. And at some point, Shoshana Maharaj, he just stopped the inquiry and he said, I'm not an information booth. You know. So then another day came up and they were working on this Gauranga Setu Bridge, this one bridge across the Ganges near where Chaitanya Saraswat Mat was. I should grab his camera and run over there and take pictures because they were having an opening of the bridge. And he said, they're all Dambasis, or, you know. And he was kind of joking with them. Anyway, Bhargava, he got a little, at some point, he got a little tweaked. About it, the whole thing, and he showed up kind of with his head down. Of course, it's interesting, Shoshana Maharaj was legally blind, but he could see he was down, he could somehow sense, he could feel, he could enter people's subconscious. He had some kind of almost mystic cities. But he could tell Bhargava was down, and he said, you know, Bhargava, I'm not a friend of your mind. I'm a friend of your soul. Okay? So get over it. You know, start asking the real questions. Physician, cure thyself. And he quoted that famous quote. So if you're going to cure somebody else, first you got to cure yourself. So that's our first duty, is to save ourselves. Then we can save somebody else. Of course, along the way, you know, we should try to give what we have to give, and that's how we get more. That's the way spiritual knowledge works. Material things, you give it away, you're at, you know, you just have so much and then you give it away, like you give money to all the beggars in India and pretty soon you have none. So what do? But spiritual knowledge doesn't work like that. The more you give, the more you get. And that's why everybody should engage in Hari Katha. The more you share Hari Katha, the deeper it goes, and it becomes part of your treasury, you know, your ability to speak Hari Katha. Over time, it's going to expand. If you keep giving it out, you keep reading, studying, and sharing it. So serious inquiry, you know, relevant inquiry, you know, about, you know, where we are spiritually to get to the next stage. Because the Vaishnavas, they're like heart surgeons. They're like, They work on us. Even I remember there was one time I couldn't even formulate the question. I was also disturbed at one point, and I'm at Shulchan Aruch's feet, and he said, he can sense it. He understood I was not something wrong. And but I can't even explain. I'm like a child before, you know, I'm an infant before I can even learn how to express what's wrong. I'm just crying inside. Something's wrong. And he just started working on me. I couldn't even articulate. It was like so complex and layered what I was dealing with. I couldn't process it down into something simple, you know, a simple question that he could understand what I, you know, what I was saying. And he starts working on me and actually starts to untie the knot, you know, in my mind that's, you know, got me all jammed up. So these Vaishnavas, they're like heart surgeons. They work on your heart. And just being in their presence, being in their aura, you know, you're being purified, you know, and what to speak of if you've, you know, you're following their directions and you have the ability to ask relevant questions and you make so much progress from that. And then in this Hari Katha, Krishna, you know, and you get around serious Vaishnavas, high Vaishnavas, learned Vaishnavas, and Krishna works his magic. If you're situated correctly, the super soul, you know, the compiler of the Vedas is within your heart and within the heart of the sadhu. And so things will happen that will benefit you, you know, just by being in that situation. And we should all try to rise up to the Madhyam stage. And part of, you know, a very important part of that is not just being Shastric, being able to quote a lot of verses. It's about being able to recognize a genuine Vaishnava. It's about being sincere enough that you can understand who's a Vaishnava and who's not, okay? And so that's one of the qualifications of a Madhyam Adhikari. And Srila Prabhupada writes in his books that Kanishta, that's not even a devotee yet. Materialistic devotee is not a full devotee yet. And so we have to progress at least to the Madhyam to fulfill our destiny, you know, to be, you know, a real Vaishnava. So Vidura, he showed the path to perfect realization of Krishna consciousness, theoretical knowledge of Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead is okay at some, you know, at the beginning, but it does not, it's not the end of it. It won't do it. We must realize it by entering into a deep relationship with Srila Prabhupada's Vani and his books and by serious inquiry at the feet of qualified souls. So the verse right after Tadvidi Panik, the 35th verse in the 4th chapter is Yaj Natva Napuna Moham. And once you have learned the truth, you will know that all beings are part of me and that they are in me and are mine. You know, that's the end result of learning the truth. You realize that in your heart of hearts and you don't forget it. And you know, even if you're considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, when you're situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you'll be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. There's a blazing fire. Prabhupada talks so much about fire and putting the iron in fire and it becomes spiritualized. There's a blazing fire turns fire into ashes, so Arjuna, does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all the reactions to material activities? Our heart melts. We start having devotional symptoms. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has come to become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So it's wonderful, this 4th chapter and the result of knowledge. Then to end this, I want to say that Vidura didn't return to the palace just for a reunion with his family members. But he had a mission, which the title of this chapter is Dhritarashtra Quits Home. Well, he just didn't do it on his own. Vidura came to wake him up. to liberate Dhritarashtra from his degraded condition. You know, he likened him to a dog accepting remnants. You know, he had mistreated Yudhisthira his entire life, and now Yudhisthira, you know, he's so magnanimous that Yudhisthira is taking care of him. But it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong on that level. But also, he's old. His teeth are falling out. He's not supposed to be in the palace. He's supposed to, you know, be preparing for his next life. And so Vidura, fresh from his pilgrimage, fresh from his association with Uddhava and Maitreya Rishi, Maitreya Muni, becomes Dhritarashtra's good advisor right to the end. And then it's said that sometimes great souls cheat others, and Yudhisthira felt cheated when suddenly Dhritarashtra and Gandhari followed him to the forest. They're missing from the palace, as is Vidura. So he came to deliver his older brother. So I can open it up now. If I've made a mistake, somebody correct me. In a lot of ways, I'm not qualified to be giving these classes. I just realized that in preparing for this class, so please correct me if I said something wrong.
Just you open it up.
Whatever.
Jai Prabhuji, very, very nice class. None of us are qualified, but somehow we have to just depend on Krishna, depend on Prabhupada, and rise to the occasion. And I think it's maybe falls in that category, though none of us may really be qualified, by all coming together in Sangha. And Krishna is so pleased. Krishna, you know, there's that, the famous verse where Krishna says that I'm not in Vaikuntha, I'm not in the heart of the yogi, but I'm wherever my devotees are praising my glories. So in these Bhagavatam classes, we're all praising Krishna's glories, and therefore Krishna's presence will empower us to speak. I did want to ask you a question. You mentioned about the Kanishta as not really being a devotee. I had always sort of thought that just like there's different stages of mango, there's the ripe mango at one end, there's a very, very tiny little green mango at the other end, which gradually goes through various progressive stages from green to a little bit less green, a little bit less green, a little bit less green. I'd always thought that Kanishta, because he does recognize the Lord and he worships the Lord in the temple, that would be a green mango. Maybe pretty far at one end, but I thought that would still be considered, he would still be considered a devotee.
It is, yeah, it's a kind of a, it's not a hard and fast. There, yeah, definitely anybody that chants, you can quote Chaitanya Charitamrita like that. Anyone who's chanting Krishna's name once, of course, some may qualify that as a pure name or a namabhas or something, but anyone who's favorable, but those that are practicing, those that are, you know, attempting to make progress are certainly devotees. And I would say, to give it balance, Prabhupada at one point called his disciples, you know, pure devotees. Mm-hmm. And anyone that's 10%, their energy, 100% is given to in the service of the spiritual master, and their goal of life is to become a pure devotee of Krishna. And, you know, that's their ideal. Like Srila Srila Maharaj once, he said, a man can be known by his ideal, which is kind of interesting. Usually we judge people by their work, you know, guna karma, you know, that's who they are. But a man can be known by his ideal. So that has everything to do with what you're becoming. And then, you know, from that, you choose your association. Your activities are molded. So even in the beginning stages of devotional life, And certainly there are many stories and many examples in the early part of the movement where, not, you know, there weren't a lot of books, and there weren't, you know, there were just devotees that were just wholesale dedicated to helping Prabhupada establish and spread the movement. And certainly, I would say those persons, you know, and during those times were pure devotees, you know, they were. And so I don't mean this. It's just something that I saw. It was either Nectar Devotion or Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and he's quoting Rupa Goswami. And that's where I've seen it. And I'm looking for it online. I don't have it right in front of me, but I can get it for you, you know, where Prabhupada says that. And so he's encouraging us to become mudra. And I think it's a very important point, because I think a lot of the issues are that we have to grow to the point where we recognize who's a Vaishnava and who's not. You know, and then the offenses. You know, unnecessary offenses. So that's the only reason I would bring such a thing up. But, you know, we don't want to be satisfied with just being Kanista. You know, and if you see the symptoms, and sometimes it's hard to get a rearview mirror on yourself or ourselves. I mean, I consider myself, I'm nowhere. What am I, you know? So, but at the same time, I have some regard. I err on the side of caution as far as offenses to Vaishnavas.
I think I know where that section or at least there's one part where Prabhupada says that about the Kanista. When Lord Chaitanya was talking about the uncle and father, Raghunath Das, he said, and Prabhupada mentions that, and he was joking because, he said that Raghunath, your uncle and father, they are like worms in a ditch of stool, and which is kind of funny, you know. I mean, after all, they were supporting all the Brahmins in Nadia, and they were, but then that, and those purports there, then in that section about Raghunath Das, when he finally made it to Puri, then Lord Chaitanya said that, you know, your uncle and father are like worms in the stool ditch. But then Prabhupada in the purport there says that, I'm not looking at the book, but I can't tell you exact verse, but that they were almost Vaishnavas. Kanista Adhikaris are almost, but Vishayis. So it kind of blurred the area. I don't know if that's what you're referring to, but it's definitely there. Prabhupada blurs the area, that blurs, makes it kind of gray, like, you know, that if Majjhimadwar, the Haranya, and Govardhan, they were almost Vaishnavas. Kanista Adhikaris are Praya, means almost Vaishnavas, but they're still like very, very super pious Hindus. So there's every kind of gradation. But because they were so attached to wealth that they were, Lord Chaitanya said, they were like worms in a stool. Which is kind of, he was helping Raghunath along with his Vairagya. So in the context of the whole thing. But Prabhupada says there, Kanista Adhikari is almost Vaishnavas. But and it definitely gets blurred in that part there.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking of some other philosophical, he was just talking about philosophically, and I'll find it. I shouldn't have said it without having the reference, but just, you know, on common sense level, you know, Kanista Adhikaris, what are the symptoms? They recognize the deity in the temple, but they walk out of the temple and, you know, they just left the presence of God. They're not seeing the Lord in every heart of every living entity. They're argumentative, you know, they're you know, there's some things. And also at the beginning, Radhana, her computer's not working, she had a question if they have Shraddha, faith. Certainly Kanisas, Kadikaris have faith, but you know, the faith becomes firm. And actually, I heard Srila Shinamar say this, kind of interesting, that Madhyam Adhikari is a vast field. And I heard also over the years that there's low Madhyam, middle Madhyam, high Madhyam, and then finally Uttam. Yeah. And it's a vast field, and that you can lose your faith along the way. You know, you know, there's a danger. It's a dangerous stage. it can, you know, you read too many books. I remember, you remember Subhananda? Subhananda.
Yeah.
He did a lot of research for the Vedic Reader, and somehow he got disturbed mentally by all that research or something.
He wrote books. He wrote the whole thing about the guru. He compiled, before there was any folio, he was able to compile the guru and disciple book with all the requisite quotes pertinent, and he took them all out. Then he has the Namamrita, which you read in a latcha every day, which is all the quotes about the holy name. But then later on, he went to Harvard, and he just got into the academia and started smoking dope and became some kind of a latter-day hippie, you know, photographer, intellectual. But he still says that Hare Krishna has a mystic potency, but he doesn't, you know, have any faith in ISKCON or doesn't associate. But he thinks Hare Krishna has some potency to it. I read it, what he wrote, where somewhere. Anyway, yeah, as far as that goes, but yeah, you could get stretched out at any point in the game. Any point in the game, you can, yeah.
So we have to have our protectors, you know, all along the way, you know, persons that can help us if we get into a jam. So in the beginning, the faith is soft, and you can become disturbed over things, and so you have to reach the stage where your faith is firm, and usually it means entering in the world of Shastra, being in good association with other devotees that are mature in their understanding of things. And therefore, you know, then the doubts get cleared and the, you know, and the arguments stop and the offenses stop. That's a big one, because that can end your career too, if you get offensive.
Also, well, I was going to say that you mentioned Vishuddha Veera died in the battle. I thought he died of tuberculosis. I mean, it's what Prabhupada says in one purport, that he...
Oh, that's possible. That's why I was asking for...
He was sick. He was always weak or sickly or something. That's why Bhishma had to go and get those women for him, you know. There was no question of him being able to do it or something.
I see. Yeah, he just didn't... But I don't know. I thought I read that somewhere, but maybe it's not true. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe he was sickly and he just succumbed to the... Yeah, that's what Prabhupada wrote. That's probably what it is.
I have a question. Kshata? Does, you know what? Kshata means kiss. Do you know what the Kshata means in this regard? Am I getting that wrong? It's a name for Vidura. Another name for Vidura. Anybody know?
It's another name. It means what?
Yes. It means kiss.
In Sanskrit?
Okay, anyway, I thought somebody might know. In Sanskrit, yeah.
Probably has a couple of meanings.
Well, I'm sure it does. I thought somebody might know. Okay, anyway.
I don't know the trivia, derivation. Did you look it up on the folio or anywhere?
I tried. I couldn't find any reference.
No, it's there, given. Then it'll just say Vidura, right?
But it's, I don't. Vrida Nandamarj would be the person asked. In his translation, Mahabharata, he also refers to Vidura as Kshata. He's addressed like that many times. Just so many.
Yeah, right. No, I forgot. Ask him. Email him.
Oh.
Unless it has something to do with, like, Kshatriya, because the Kshat... Well, the Kshat means hurt, though. Try me. I don't know. I'm speculating. Yeah, it'd be nice to know. Or remember what if we may have known it sometime and forgotten.
Where did you find that translation, that KISS translation?
Yeah, I look at most of this stuff online. There's a website called Spoken Sanskrit. It's really easy.
Really?
Sanskrit in English comes up,
and it's spelled phonetically. It's spelled the same way.
It's got the long A.
Yeah, but anyway, whatever, you know. You know what Sanskrit is like. It has so many different meanings.
Right. If there's a slightly different pronunciation, it's a totally different word. You know? Spoken Sanskrit, there's a website.
Yeah, just type it in, spokensanskrit.com. It's really easy to use.
Interesting. Okay. Audible.
Anyone else? And
Daniel had a bit of a...
Go ahead.
Hey, Krishna, thank you for a very nice class. You know, I watched some Mahabharata, just a little bit, and at the beginning, I remember vaguely that, I'm saying vaguely because it's very vague, that he had a brother, and the brother, one of them died in a battle, and he was sick or something like that. So it seems that there's a version that says there were two sons of Satyavati. Are you aware of a version like that?
No. I don't know.
Yeah.
What was the question?
There were two sons of Satyavati.
And one of them died in a battle and the other one was sick. So that would seem to reconcile yourself and...
Yes, Vichitravirya and... What
version?
Chitrangada, and he was in a fight with a demigod that had the same name, and he got killed.
Oh, okay. There you go. So I got mixed up there. Yeah, that's right. And Vichitravirya was a surviving son, but he was sick.
Yes. Hi, Krishna. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Prabhu, very much for giving class. I guess this, so you're leaving for India soon, right?
On the 19th.
Okay, we'll have a pleasant trip. By the way, Mother Irmeli is also leaving on the 20th. So have a nice time in India.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you, Prabhus, very much for listening in. And tomorrow we have a second part of Dvijamani's seminar. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody then. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.